Welcome to the Deep Dive. We go through the sources so you don't have to. Today, we're looking at a really interesting community update from the West Shore School District. It's called Points of Pride Summer 2025. Our goal here is pretty simple. Pull out the key takeaways, the big achievements, the challenges, and the plans they've laid out. Basically, a shortcut for you to get up to speed on West Shore.
Right, and it's more than just, you know, test scores and grades. This document gives a pretty holistic view. It covers how the district runs behind the scenes finances, the actual buildings, community connections. It's a snapshot of the whole operation.
Exactly. And there's some really great stuff in here. State champions, national academic winners, some big community donations we should talk about, and also those necessary, sometimes tough budget decisions. Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start with the points of pride. Because honestly, it looks like West Shore had a pretty remarkable year for both students and staff. First up, they recognized their Employees of the Year for 2024-2025. Katie Kaufman, who's a fifth-grade teacher at Fairview Intermediate, and Sheree Patton, a West Shore Restore Monitor over at New Cumberland Middle School.
And it's important they recognize both, right? An instructional role and a key support role. It shows they understand that it takes everyone working together to make a school community strong. That's a good sign for morale, I think.
Absolutely. And speaking of strong performances, wow, the Cedar Cliff Colts baseball team. They became the 2025 PIAA Class 6A state champions.
That's huge. 6A is the highest classification.
Yeah, and get this, it wasn't easy. They battled North Penn for 13 innings. 13. It was the longest title game in PIAA history.
No way. How did it end?
It ended 1-0 on a walk-off balk. Can you believe it? At Penn State's Medlar Field back on June 13th. And incredibly, it was their first ever state baseball title. Just fantastic.
That is quite a story. 13 innings, a 1-0 win. That speaks volumes about perseverance, teamwork, you know, holding it together under immense pressure. It's more than just a win. It's a lesson in resilience.
For sure. And the achievements didn't stop on the field. Let's talk academics. Cedar Cliff High School's Academic World Quest team, they took first place nationally in Washington, D.C.
Wow, Academic World Quest. That's a serious competition. What kind of topics did they have to master?
Oh, it was incredibly diverse. Things like critical minerals in Africa, space and national security, borders and boundaries, even music and diplomacy. And while they were in D.C., they met with officials from the State Department, NATO, the ambassador of Mexico, top global journalists, too.
That's an amazing experience, not just a competition.
Right. And the prize.
Yeah.
And all expenses paid trip to Turkey, thanks to Turkish Airlines. Talk about an incentive.
That really shows the caliber of students they have. It takes serious critical thinking to tackle those kinds of complex global issues. It's not just about memorizing facts. It's about analysis and understanding connections. A great example of preparing students for a very connected world.
And there's more. The West Shore Indoor Percussion Team also had an incredible run. They finished their season undefeated back in April. Capped it off with a gold medal in the Keystone Indoor Drill Association's Scholastic A Championship. They beat out 16 other groups.
Scholastic A, that's a very competitive class, so top marks there too.
Definitely. Now shifting a bit towards community impact, this is pretty significant. Giant Food Stores awarded the district initially just over $6,800 for childhood hunger through their Roundup program. But then they kicked in another $5,000 specifically for the district's weekend bag program.
So almost $12,000 total. That's fantastic.
Yeah, $11,823.23 to be exact. And this connects to a major district milestone. For the first time ever recorded, the district served over 1 million meals to students during the school year.
1 million meals? That's incredible. It highlights how these community partnerships directly support student well-being. You can't learn effectively if you're hungry. It shows a real commitment beyond just the classroom curriculum. It's about supporting the whole child.
Absolutely. And all these efforts, academic, athletic, community support, they all lead to the ultimate goal, right?
Yeah.
Graduation. 570 students from Cedar Cliff, Redland, and one from the Capital Area Intermediate Unit celebrated at the Farm Show Complex on June 6th. Ready to lead, as the document says, meaningful, purposeful, and impactful lives.
A great way to cap off a year of achievements.
Okay, so we've celebrated the highlights, the points of pride. But to make all that happen, you need sound financial management. Let's dive into the 2025-2026 final budget. The board approved it on June 12th. Total expenditures are set at nearly $165 million. That's $164,931,518.
Okay, $165 million. How does that break down in terms of impact on residents' taxes?
Right. So there is a property tax increase. It's about 3.21% for Cumberland County residents and 3.20% for York County. But importantly, this is below the maximum allowed by the state. The limit set by the PA Department of Education was 4.8% this year.
Okay, so they didn't go for the maximum increase allowed. How did they balance the budget then?
It was a combination of that millage increase and also transferring funds from their savings, basically. Mm. They moved just over $2.6 million, $2,621,835 from the general fund balance.
Gotcha. And you mentioned the state limit that relates to the Act 1 index, right? Maybe we should quickly explain that for listeners.
Good idea. You want to take that?
Sure. So the Act 1 Index, essentially, it's a cap set each year by the Pennsylvania Department of Education. It limits how much a school district can raise property taxes without needing specific approval, either from voters in a referendum or by getting a special exception from the PDE.
And why does it exist?
Well, it came out of Act 1 of 2006, which was called the Taxpayer Relief Act. The main goals were to put some controls on property tax hikes, make school finances more transparent, encourage fiscal discipline, and also promote more equity in funding. The calculation itself involves things like the statewide average weekly wage and federal employment costs. It's a bit complex, but the point is, it sets a ceiling. And it's not the same for every district. Some get adjustments based on poverty levels.
Okay, that context is really helpful. So knowing that, let's look deeper into West Shore's budget pressures.
Mm-hmm.
The document highlights several rising costs, which probably sound familiar to other districts too. Cyber charter tuition payments, special education needs, pension contributions, and healthcare costs.
The usual suspects, unfortunately. Significant cost drivers for most public schools right now.
Yes. But even with those pressures, the district is still putting money into areas the community identified as priorities. Things like mental health support for students, career and technical education programs, improving facilities, and just general building upkeep.
So it's that constant balancing act, isn't it? Managing unavoidable cost increases while still investing in things that directly benefit students and maintain infrastructure.
Exactly. And one of those pressures you mentioned, cyber charter tuition, seems particularly significant here. They're projecting they'll have to pay out over $10,558,000 for students attending cyber charters in the 25-26 school year.
$10.5 million. That's a huge chunk of change leaving the district's budget.
It really is. And the document points out this puts upward pressure on local taxes. They do mention their own virtual option, the Excel Virtual Learning Academy, as a way to try and keep some of those tax dollars local and provide an in-district alternative.
That makes sense, a strategy many districts are trying to implement.
Now, what about federal funding? It seems like a small slice of the pie.
It is, percentage-wise. According to the document, it's only about 1.56% of the total budget, roughly $2.5 million. But these are mainly title funds coming from the Federal Elementary and Secondary Education Act, or ESEA.
And why are those specific funds so important, even if the total amount seems small?
Because they're highly targeted. These funds are specifically designated to support vulnerable student populations, students from low-income families, English language learners, kids who need extra academic help. So while it's a small percentage overall, that $2.5 million likely has a disproportionately large impact on ensuring equity and providing critical support services.
Okay. But the document also mentions a challenge with this funding, right? Predictability.
Yes, exactly. Federal funding depends on annual congressional appropriations. And lately, those approvals have been increasingly delayed and uncertain. That makes it really hard for districts to plan long term when a key funding source for specific programs is kind of up in the air year to year.
Makes sense. So just to summarize the revenue sources for 25-26, local taxes make up the bulk, almost 70%. State funding is nearly 29%. And federal is that small 1.56% piece.
And interestingly, if you compare to the prior year, based on these numbers, it looks like the local share went down slightly while the state share increased a bit to compensate. Federal also saw a small dip. This might reflect broader trends in school funding reliance.
And on the spending side.
Salaries and benefits. Still the biggest expenditure category year after year. That's pretty standard for school districts.
So bottom line for residents. The district is juggling rising costs, using a mix of local taxes and reserve funds, staying under the state tax cap, but still facing major pressures like cyber charter tuition.
That sums it up well. It's a tightrope walk.
Okay, let's move from the budget sheets to bricks and mortar, or maybe turf and clay in this case. Okay. Let's talk about infrastructure improvements starting at the Redland campus.
Oh, yeah.
There's a really nice story here about a new baseball and softball hitting facility. It's been named The Rob.
The Rob, in honor of someone.
Yes, in honor of Coach Rob Gildea. The document emphasizes it was a real community effort, lots of fundraising, the Redland Capital campaign was involved. It really feels like more than just a building. It's a symbol of community spirit.
Absolutely. Projects like that, driven by community passion and honoring local figures, they build such a strong sense of connection and pride. It goes way beyond just the function of the facility. It creates a legacy.
Definitely. So beyond the rub, what else has been happening at the Redland campus? Some major access improvements finished up in May. This involved renovating the bus loop, putting in new stairs to get to the athletic facilities, new retaining walls, and really important stormwater management upgrades.
Sounds like foundational work, improving access and safety. What's next for the fields themselves?
That's where it gets really interesting. The district secured a $2 million state grant. It's called an RACP grant, Redevelopment Assistance Capital Program. They worked with the community group, Redland Home Field Advantage, to get this.
Okay, $2 million in grant funding is significant. Does the district have to match it?
Yes, it requires a district match. So the total pot for these proposed athletic field changes is around $4 million. They had consultants present plans back in June. We're talking about a new turf field, more stormwater work, adding parking in a couple of spots, and relocating the tennis courts because of accessibility issues.
A new turf field, parking, accessibility, that's a major upgrade package.
Yes. And there are even discussions about potential additional things like field lighting or a support building for the turf field, but those are outside the current $4 million estimate and haven't been approved.
It really shows the long-term strategic planning involved. You secure a grant, you leverage community support, you phase the work. It's complex, balancing needs, wants, and the financial reality.
Right. Now let's stay at Redland, but focus on another vital community asset.
Yeah.
The West Shore Natatorium, the pool. The document calls this Stories of the West Shore Natatorium Part 2, highlighting its wide use.
Who uses it primarily?
All sorts of people. Students, obviously they have aquatics classes teaching survival skills like swimming for younger grades, boating and canoeing for sixth grade, endurance swimming in high school. There are even historical photos mentioned from the 90s. Plus, interscholastic teams use it, and the general community through the West Shore Rec Commission. They even did lifeguard certification there in May.
So it's a real hub for water safety and recreation.
Definitely.
Okay.
But it's facing some serious issues. The document outlines an urgent need for renovations. We're talking major systems. Hazardous chemical storage needs updating, plumbing and piping. The electrical system needs a full replacement. Apparently the original panel uses parts that aren't even made anymore. And the HVAC system too. There are pictures of corroding pipe hangers. That sounds pretty critical.
Yikes. Obsolete systems, corrosion, that sounds like it could impact safety and just the ability to keep it running. What's the potential cost?
It's a wide range based on the preliminary estimates from June 2025, somewhere between $4.4 million and $8.8 million.
What about the timeline?
No formal timeline exists yet, but the process would take time. Once a basic design is approved, expect about 6 months for detailed designs, getting permits, approving contracts. And then the crucial part, the actual pool construction would take 10 to 12 months. During that entire time, the natatorium would be closed, unavailable.
A year without the pool. That's a significant disruption balanced against a multi-million dollar investment. It's fascinating. Preserving this long-standing community resource versus the substantial cost and downtime needed to modernize it for the future. A tough balancing act.
For sure. And just quickly, one more facility note, general summer upgrades. Highland Elementary got some targeted roof renovations on sections over 20 years old. Not a full replacement, but proactive maintenance to prevent bigger problems. Washington Heights Elementary is apparently next on the list for similar work.
Smart move. Preventative maintenance often saves money in the long run.
Okay, let's shift from physical infrastructure to the digital kind. Technology in the classroom. Big news here is a new Apple lease agreement for the 2025-2026 school year. They're moving to iPads for every grade level, a consistent device across the board, moving away from the mix they had before.
iPads for everyone. Why is that consistency important according to the district?
Well, the key thing is that students use these devices not just at school, but they take them home too. So they can do assignments, review materials, access resources outside school hours. Consistency makes that easier for students, teachers, and even parents. Less of a learning curve switching between devices or grade levels.
And it addresses the digital divide, right? Not every student has a computer or reliable internet at home.
Exactly. That's a major point they highlight. This provides the device, and they also offer mobile hotspots for internet access and downloadable content for offline use. It's about equity. The benefits listed are that consistency, reduced learning curve, building long-term tech skills, flexibility, and keeping parents in the loop.
It seems like a foundational step. Equipping students with necessary tools, ensuring equitable access, and building those digital literacy skills they absolutely need for the future. It's not just about homework, it's about preparing them for college, careers, and just navigating the modern world.
Well said. So that brings us pretty much through this deep dive into West Shore's summer update. We've seen some incredible high state titles, national academic wins, strong community support. We've also looked at the serious business of managing a nearly $165 million budget with rising costs, and the significant investments they're planning or making in their facilities, like at Redland, the Natatorium, and also in technology for every student.
Yeah, it really paints a picture of a district that's actively celebrating success while also tackling some pretty significant challenges head on. You see the connections, the budget decisions enable the programs, the facilities support the activities, the technology enhances the learning. It's all part of that ecosystem.
Absolutely. So reflecting on all this, the points of pride, the multi-million dollar renovation plans, the budget balancing act, the iPads for every kid, it makes you think, how do all these different pieces, from a walk-off bulk championship to a complex HVAC system replacement, truly fit together to shape not just the students' experience today, but the overall health and future of the entire community? What really stands out to you as you hear all this?